Welcome. We're glad you're here today. I do have two readings for you today. The first one is one of my all-time favorites. It comes from Micah chapter 6. I think you'll probably end up being very familiar with this. I despise your feasts, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies, even though you offer me your burnt offerings and grain offerings. I will not accept them, and the peace offerings of your fattened animals I will not look upon. Take away from me the noise of your songs, to the melody of harps I will not listen, but let justice roll down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. I also would like to read for you something from Dorothy Day. She says, "What we would like to do is change the world, make it a little simpler for people to feed, clothe, and shelter themselves as God intended them to do. And by fighting for better conditions, by crying out unceasingly for the rights of the workers, the poor, the destitute, the rights of the worthy and unworthy poor, in other words, we can, to a certain extent, change the world. We can work for the oasis, the little cell of joy and peace in a hairy world. We can throw our pebble in the pond and be confident that its ever-widening circle will reach around the world. We repeat, there is nothing we can do but love. And dear God, please enlarge our hearts to love each other, to love our neighbor, to love our enemy as our friend." I'm also going to ask Joel, one of our good friends and favorite musicians, if he would favor us with a tune today.
Certainly. Thank you. Going to take a little sidestep from Reverend Mark's message today, which I'm sure he's going to be back to offer a happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. And I was trying to think of a song I knew that was two fathers, and I couldn't think of one. But this is one by a father expressing his love and protectiveness towards one of his sons. This is John Lennon's Beautiful Boy. Before you go to sleep, have no fear. The master's gone, he's on the run, and your daddy's here. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Before you close your eyes, say a little prayer. Every day, in every way, is getting better and better. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Out in the ocean, sailing away, I can hardly wait until you come of age. But I guess we both just have to be patient. Cause it's a long way to go. Yes, it's a hard road to hoe. It's a long way to go. But in the meantime, cross the street, come take my hand. Life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Before you go to sleep, say a little prayer. Every day, in every way, is getting better and
This morning, not surprisingly, since I just got back from the Memorial March, has a little bit to do with that. It's entitled, On the Morals of a Nation. Yesterday, my day actually began the day before at midnight. I pulled myself out of bed, stumbled around the house getting a few last minute items together, and headed out to meet a group of folks who had been pulled together by the beloved community to take a 6-hour bus trip in order to attend and participate in the Poor People's and Low Wage Workers' Assembly and Moral March on Washington and to the polls. I'm happy to say I was not the only person from our church community who attended. It won't surprise you to know that Jim North also took part in the event. So, if you see Jim sometime today, or me as well, just, you know, be really nice to us. We're tired and a little bit worn out. So. And I don't know about Jim, but I managed to get back home in bed just around midnight last night. So yeah, it was a 24-hour whirlwind trip packed full of speakers on just about every major cause of social justice. And it included speakers like folks like Dr. Cornel West, Dr. King's daughter Bernice, and of course, the man who made the whole thing happen, North Carolina's own Reverend Dr. William Barber. It was a genuine treat. A genuine treat to hear from such well-known and well-thought-of speakers and leaders of social justice. But by far, most of the speakers were folks like you and me, sharing their personal stories of struggle to help us understand not only how real the struggle in the United States is, but how unnecessary it is. Now, before I go any further, let me say I know how easy it is for a Sunday message about social justice to start sounding sort of political. So I'm going to ask you to note that I will not be naming names or political parties. I will, however, directly point out the woeful realities of far too many people in the U.S. I will point directly at our political system, which continues to suffer from inexcusable moral failings. Now, for some folks, that might not seem like what a minister should be talking about on Sunday. And for some, it just doesn't even seem Christian, but I personally beg to differ. You see, a spiritual life that is indifferent about the lives of those who are suffering, well, that's a pretty shallow spiritual life. And the reality is that a nation's government shapes the day-to-day life of its citizens. And if those citizens' lives are ones of suffering, well, spiritual people must address it. They must. And if we wish to address it, we must address the failings of the government that allowed it to happen. Now, as I said, it was a whirlwind trip with an astounding number of speakers. I would need a lot more time than the small amount of time I punched notes onto my phone riding in the back of the bus and the few hours that I had this morning to try to give credit to all the people who talked and that I might be sharing from, but I do want to share all of this with you. It required even more time to adequately speak to each issue. And that's a luxury that I didn't have between last evening and this morning. So, I'd like to simply share some of the perspectives that stood out for me along with my own thoughts and wording. Today, I would like to look at the topic of budgets. Bet you've not heard a lot of sermons on budgets. If we, finance person is like, woo-hoo! If we are interested in more than our bottom line, and we should be, if we are interested in more than our bottom line, the budgets should be moral documents. That is to say, as trite as that saying may be, we do tend to put our money where our mouth is. I do not need to hear you tell me what is important to you. Hear you tell me where your morals lie if you have a budget. You see, your discretionary budget is a moral map of what you value in life. Now, I'm telling my age a little bit here, but I've often said, show me the register of your checkbook and I will tell you what matters to you. And the same is true of a nation. Show me where you spend your money and I will tell you which of your citizens actually matter to you. On a side note, that is equally true of the church, but that's a topic for another Sunday, I know. If we want to know what we are valuing as a nation, just consider the massive piece of our budget that we spend on military. A whopping 46% of the U.S.'s discretionary funds, the discretionary budget, is spent on the military. How about our health and education? Less than 10% each. Housing and community? Less than 5%. It is a moral decision, making it the moral reality of the nation. As Dr. King once said, a nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. Budgets are, not surprisingly, frequently formed around a fear of scarcity. And that means it is also formed out of greed. Our nation's budget certainly is. In a nation as wealthy as ours, there is no excuse for children to starve to death, for folks to be homeless, for folks to not to be able to get reasonable health care. In a nation where more than 80% of the population believes in a higher power, and many secularists practice high moral values of humanism, there is no excuse for the conditions in which 140 million of our poor and low-wage workers must live in. There is no excuse. Because in our nation of unspeakable wealth, there is no scarcity of resources. That is a myth. There is, however, a scarcity of moral leadership. There is a scarcity of compassion. There is a scarcity of the fortitude and boldness that is necessary to deliver national policies that ensure that our fellow citizens are not homeless, our fellow citizens are not hungry, then they are not lacking in the health care they deserve, not lacking in the ability to know their children are safe at school, not lacking in their ability to shop for groceries without the color of the skin making them a target of a gun, not lacking in clean water and clean air, not lacking in access to upward economic opportunities. You see, we do not have a scarcity of resources. We have a scarcity of leadership with moral fortitude. We have a scarcity of leadership that is willing to address the issues of poverty and inequality, which result in the deaths of 250,000 Americans every year. As Christians, and as followers of the teachings of Jesus, we must know, we must recognize that we are called to confront this abject lack of a moral compass. It's what love would do. It's what compassion would do. It's what Jesus not only would do, but did do at every turn. You see, in a nation as wealthy as ours, poverty is not inevitable. Poverty is a political decision. More than that, poverty is a policy decision. Poverty is at the root of the problem of our nation, and it is built into the system. Poverty creates food deserts and hunger. Poverty results in substandard housing, homelessness, inadequate nutrition, inadequate child care, lack of access to health care, unsafe neighborhoods, and under-resourced schools. Poverty pushes people to the point where they think the only solution to their problem is a gun. It impacts learning, a person's health, their ability to raise children. The list could go on and on. All of those things that poverty creates are the things that people of any spiritual ilk, as well as those who practice humanism, those are things that we should find so morally reprehensible that we seek to end them at all costs. But here's the thing. The rich, the powerful, who devise these immoral budgets, they know how to keep us from doing the work that results in the end of poverty. They keep us divided, focused on our differences rather than our commonalities. And I'm here to tell you, as they know, a nation divided cannot stand together. They cannot stand together to tackle the important issue of poverty and the residual issues that it creates when they are busy fighting and bickering with each other. Yes, a nation divided cannot stand together, but equally, a nation united cannot be divided. Unless the division you are seeing is about the powerful and then the rest of us, you're not seeing the divide that matters. Any divide that politicians tell you about is a false divide. It is by design, crafted to separate us so that we will not be united. Because as Dr. King once noted, the thing that they fear, the powerful, the lawmakers, the thing that they feel the most is that the poor and concerned white folks and black and brown folks get together on this topic of poverty in the United States. Because united, we are a force to be reckoned. I must admit, I am afraid that at times that Dr. King was right in saying that privileged whites are more interested in order than in justice. In fact, it's a lovely way to be able to speak of the importance of racial inequality, but to actually practice what I like to call polite racism. You see, order maintains normalcy, the status quo. Order capitulates and stagnates the marginalized and stepped on. Order provides fertile ground on which to keep systemic injustice alive. In such systems, order is a stranglehold on justice, a stranglehold on the vision of a more perfect nation. We must be willing to come together and rattle some cages, break down walls of divisions and the laws and regulations that make them. Because the reality is that that kind of order actually creates and reinforces the chaos that far too many of our fellow citizens live in. We need unity, not the order of things that create division. We simply will not be the more perfect union that our nation's founders dreamed of in the preamble of our Constitution until we overcome these false divisions and become more unified. And as a spiritual people, that should always, always be our highest calling, our deepest desire, our constant focus in our life, overcoming false divisions, pulling folks together, showing love at every turn, lifting each other up, and creating a better world for us all. There are, of course, many ways to begin to address the spiritual and moral failings of this nation's immoral budget. But the one that you will hear me speak of the most is this: voting. Voting is one of the most powerful tools that we have. And if it wasn't, why would politicians put so much time and effort in trying to take it away from so many of our poor and low-wage citizens? If we unite in the voting booths, the reign of the wealthy is over. All lives can be lifted up, and we can begin to live in unity with one another. We must let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. I will conclude with the words of Dorothy Day. We can, to a certain extent, change the world. We can work for the oasis, the little cell of joy and peace in a harried world. We can throw our pebble in the pond and be confident that its ever-widening circles will reach around the world. We repeat, there is nothing we can do but love, and dear God, please enlarge our hearts to love each other, to love our neighbor, and to love our enemy as our friend. Amen. Joe, I'd like to invite you forward. Ask you to play a song for us, sir.
That's a hard act to follow, Reverend Mark.
So I think you'll do just fine.
Oh, okay. Here's another song by John Lennon. Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all people living for today. There's no countries. Is it hard to do? Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one. to know possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood and sisterhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world you could. You may say I'm a dreamer. I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us. And the world will live as one.
I'm almost finished, as a matter of fact. And part of that my project that's coming out of it is a book of progressive prayers. I shared one with you last week, and I'd like to share one on justice with you today. Let's bow our heads together, accept this as a prayer, as a meditation, or just grab hold of words that connect with you. We live in a world that has managed very pleasantly to distract us from the injustices that exist within it. There's just so much to do, so much with which to busy our lives, that it is easy to lose track of the real needs in this world to which we are called to bring justice. It is so profoundly and sadly human to get wrapped up in protecting what we have managed to gain in a way that overlooks how much so many others do not have. Too frequently, our lives leave little room for justice. In this moment, we pledge to renew our effort and energy to help those for whom we should be advocates every day, but so far have not always figured out how to do so. In this moment, we pledge to renew our effort and energy to help those who are sick and can't afford health care. We renew our pledge because too frequently our lives leave little room for justice. We renew our pledge to help those who have no option but to sort through the trash to find their next meal. We renew our pledge to help those who have no close friends and just need one person to truly care. We renew our pledge to help those for whom shelter is a cardboard box with a plastic lining. We renew our pledge to help those who have lost their jobs and are looking for work, but must at times endure the condescending judgment of others while they do. We renew our pledge to work to aid the people around the world who will die today due to lack of food or clean water, while our nation consumes enough game day snacks to feed them all. We know we cannot solve the world's problems on our own,
may we be inspired to try. May the justice we so freely share with those closest to us, or that we at times share with folks we barely know, may the sharing of that justice and love inspire us to live lives that are ever flowing with love and justice for all people. Amen. Receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. And may your words and actions bring that love and happiness to each person you meet. Go now in love and in peace.